there.
The PT pilot pointed at the distant horizon.
Black dust! It's the biggest I've ever seen!
Silence, fool!
Lieutenant Brandon leaned over the railing that surrounded a 50-caliber machine gun attached to a gimbal stanchion. The officer held a pair of binocs to his face and manually dialed the focus. The batteries were long dead, and many of the functions of the complex device were unknown, but the prism-based optics worked just fine.
Shit fire, it's a monster! Pilot, kill the engines. I want dead silence.
Aye, aye, sir.
Engineer room to bridge. What's going on up there?
Shut up. There's a sea mutiny on the horizon. No sounds, no walking, nothing, until the lieutenant says so.
Aye, aye.
Going to the stern, a bosun waved a bright orange flag at the other 9 boats as a warning, but most of them had already gone silent, and soon the entire armada was coasting along by sheer inertia through the Pacific Ocean. Props still, engines banked and quiet. To the naked eye, there was only some rough water ahead. Maybe an underwater volcano bubbling up steam or a school of sharks in a feeding frenzy. But under the glass, Brandon saw it all. A humpback whale was fighting for its life. Bleeding from 100 wounds, the creature frantically rolled over and over, trying to get loose from the writhing tentacles ripping off chunks of its flesh. An eye was removed, the blowhole ripped wide. The whale slammed down a tail that could have crushed the PT boat flat, rolled over once more, but to no avail. More of the tentacles stabbed into its huge body and began to pulse as they pumped out the life fluids. Pitifully moaning a warning to others of its kind, the humpback still tried to swim away, but was dragged backward under the choppy waters. Then a red geyser shot into the air, going up 100 feet as the horrible feeding began.
Nuke me.
The pilot grabbed his blaster for no sane reason. The weapon would be totally useless against one of the ocean leviathans. Its only possible function was to blow out his brains and save the man from being swallowed whole, boat and all, in a single gulp by the underwater mutiny. Padding along in bare feet, Thor Hannigan approached the machine gun nest. The lieutenant was leaning over the railing, watching the death match closely through the binocs.
No, never seen one before.
What's wrong? Scared?
Yes.
Me too. If that thing attacks, we don't have a chance in hell of reaching land in time. Even if I sacrifice the other boats, it'll still swallow us all, then go looking for more.
So, we wait.
Aye. Wait in silence. Until it leaves.
Aye, sir. What's another couple of days?
Sluggishly, Christy awakened to find herself naked under the covers of a large bed. The mattress was softer than anything she'd ever been on, the quilt warm and heavy. The woman almost went back to sleep, it was so comfortable. Then the images of the fight on the beach flooded back into her conscious mind, and Christy abruptly sat upright, reaching for her blaster. But she was alone. The room was big, brick walls, bare concrete floor with thick rugs of different designs. All of the furniture was oversized, the 2 wooden chairs before the fireplace, old leather shiny with polish. There were no windows. The light came from bright white lanterns. The door was lined with bolts, all of them on her side. Obviously, this was no prison. Aside from her lack of clothing, there were no indications she'd been violated. Lots of bruises, but only where she remembered Langford pummeling her with his massive fists. Then she noted the wounds had been tended, cuts stitched closed. Christy recognized Mildred's style of a battlefield dressing in the bandage on her shoulder. There came a fuzzy memory of the tunnel fight and a confused impression of being carried through the ville by Ryan and J.B. with people cheering. Had she aced Langford and was now the Baron? Or was he still alive and softening her to be his bed partner? Rising from the soft cushions, Christy shivered more at the thought than the cold floor, then remembered slashing his throat. Goosebumps running along her skin, Christy stepped off the floor and onto a rug.
Ah, better.
Across the bedroom was a fireplace with a cheery blaze, a couple of chairs set tandem, and a large table covered with what looked like her clothing. As Christy padded over, a young girl rose from one of the chairs holding a blaster, then gasped and fell to her knees, bowing.
Morning.
The girl raised her face and touched her throat, shaking her head no.
A mute?
The girl shook her head yes. She was a perfect bed warmer for any baron. Walking past the kneeling girl, Christy examined the articles on the table, running fingertips along the patches. There were new buttons, and her boots shone.
Your work?
The mute gave a head nod, shoulders braced for a strike.
Excellent work. Well done. What do I call you, girl?
Rising timidly, she touched the toe of the cowboy boot.
Steel?
A head shake.
Silver?
The girl nodded.
Well done, Silver. Should be the head seamstress for a big vill with talent like this. Pre-dark clothes aren't this well made.
Silver blinked rapidly.
Baron, not much with compliments. Even when they were due, eh?
A shy smile and a vigorous head shake.
Well, that changes today. New baron, new rules.
Quickly getting dressed, Christy was amazed that somebody had even curried her bearskin coat. The thing never looked so good. Lying nearby were her weapons, cleaned and oiled, along with the baron's matching set of knives and two blasters.
Where are the others?
The red-headed beauty strapped on a gun belt. She checked the load in her blaster and tucked it into her belt. Only a few rounds were left. The baron's weapons she left where they were. Too many was the same as not enough. Silver bowed again and gestured toward the door.
Take me to them.
Silver scurried to unlock the bedroom door. Her first command as a baron, and look at the little mute go. On the other side was a long hallway without furniture or windows. Christy recognized it as a kill zone. Invaders would have no place to ambush the baron or hide when he shot back. Proceeding to the far end, Silver gave a coated knock on a heavy door banded with iron. On creaking hinges, the massive portal was pushed aside by frowning sec men, long blasters in their hands, but then both of the guards beamed smiles and saluted.
Good day, Baron.
What? Oh, yes.
Christy nodded in passing and started down the wide brick stairs and into a tremendous room with cinder block walls. It was obviously the throne room. At one end was a dais and a massive chair, covered with intricate carvings of mushroom clouds and other symbols of war. Swords and axes decorated the walls. Four chandeliers were suspended from the ceiling, but only one was lit, casting most of the room into shadows, including the chopping block, the neck rest stained dark with old blood. Crossing the room, Christy paused by the dais and noticed the bullet holes, then went to the chair and easily found a knife and a blaster tucked away in hidden folds. Even here, Langford had expected betrayal. Silver patiently waited for Christy to decide to continue. Going to the windows, Christy threw back the shutters and saw it was night outside.
How long did I sleep?
The girl went to a lantern and, touching it, raised just her forefinger. One lantern burn. About 8 hours.
Oh, good. But you better show me that dining hall fast before I start eating the throne.
The girl was startled, then almost allowed a smile to cross her pretty young face as she darted across the room. Past an iron portcullis, another set of double doors opened into a courtyard of flowering bushes and stone benches. A gravel path circled a marble fountain with a pre-dark bronze statue, and orchids dotted the basin with tiny fish darting about in the clear water. Smoky torches lit the courtyard, and a dozen sec men stood smoking green cigs, talking softly. But at the sight of the two females, they snapped to attention and briskly saluted. Silver stayed in the background, head bowed, hands folded.
Ready for inspection, my lord.
Is the vill secure?
Yes, sir.
Then continue as you are for the time being.
Christy turned to go.
What?
You shouldn't walk alone, my lord. Which of us do you want as an escort?
I need no escorts inside my own castle.
Touching her blaster, Christy briskly walked away. A side path led to another door of iron and wood. Silver pushed it open with some difficulty, and Christie entered a long room with a vaulted ceiling. Instantly, she was assaulted by the rich smells of roasting beef and fresh bread. Then a wave of weakness washed over Christie, and she nearly stumbled. The need for food was a knife in her guts by now. Over by a roaring fireplace, the companions were seated at a massive table, looking over their maps and cleaning their weapons. The other end was covered with dirty dishes. Ryan snapped his head up at her approach and smiled widely, the first such expression she'd seen in months. It faded quickly, but she went directly to the man and kissed him soundly.
I'm glad to see you too, lover. Now get the fuck out of my chair. I'm the Baron.
My lord.
Silver, have you eaten yet?
The mute girl was gone, moving as silently as morning mist. Maybe there was more muty in that mute than she expected. Judiciously, Mildred watched as the woman stiffly took a chair from a line of them along the wall. She'd tended Christie as best she could under the circumstances. The redhead had several sprains and quite a few bone bruises, painful but not life-threatening. Good news, as without her med kit, there was little Mildred actually could do. And the local healer knew nothing of basic hygiene, much less surgery or chemistry. She used a lot of wild herbs and seemed to have a pathological fear of science. Understandable, considering what science had done to the entire world 100 years ago. Christie sat down heavily at the table, and serving girls appeared from a steamy kitchen to lay down bowls and plates of food. There was a whole loaf of brown bread still radiating warmth from the oven, plus a tiny dish of honey with a piece of comb. A heaping bowl of steamed kelp with some sort of chopped nuts on top, a tray of boiled crab, baked fish, a bowl of fresh oysters still in their shell with a curved knife on top for easy opening. There was no glassware, but the wooden mugs were carved with scenes of sailing ships and naked women. Taking a sailing ship, Christie poured it full of water and greedily drank.
How are you feeling? Better than Langford.
Christie hacked off a piece of the bread and stuffed it whole into her mouth. Then she swallowed and ripped off a crab leg to crack the shell apart and start picking out the sweet white meat.
I told them to bring enough for five.
Smart move.
Christie tossed the hollow leg onto an empty platter and started on another. Crab was a favorite of hers, and they didn't find much of it in the deserts of North America.
Aside from your hunger, you're fine?
Uh-huh. How do we stand?
The people worship you and tolerate us.
Good to hear, J.B.
Langford, Major Asswipe.
From what we can discern, dear lady, he ruled by sheer intimidation.
No rewards for loyalty?
None. Which explains the party over you chilling the man.
Even over the fireplace, they could hear faint sounds of celebration from the ville. Laughing, singing, even the occasional gunshot.
To be blunt, unloved would be a polite way of essaying his general social demeanor.
Got that right.
We have to get those backpacks. I'm down to 5 rounds.
Same here.
Less! That's why I have one of these flintlocks now.
Jack made no comment. Langford had owned a .357 Magnum pistol, and the teenager had taken all of the spare ammo off the dead man. It fit his own blaster just fine. Doc had done the same with the Baron's Navy Colt .44, reaping a harvest of primer caps and lead for his Civil War hand cannon.
5 for the Steyr, 1 clip for the Sig Sauer. But even with torches, it's too dark. We'll send divers to reclaim our backpacks at first light.
Under tight guard.
Bet your ass.
Christie drew her belt knife to smear honey on another piece of bread. Then she paused, recalling where it had last been, and dipped a finger into the gooey sweet to do the job.
Also, your Sekhmen aren't too happy to get replaced by us.
Tough. Probably only afraid you'll take away their privileges in the gaudy house.
Langford was a human, by the way. Just really strong and heavily muscled. Not a thing out of the ordinary. I cut him open to check.
And to make sure he was dead. But it's a good thing we're not planning on staying here. The villa's a pest hole. Seen cleaner ruins after a shitter exploded.
Disgusting.
The latrines are far enough away from the wells, but not by anybody's plan. Pure chance.
Lots of slaves, but they're all captured pirates. For some reason, Langford didn't use slave labor.
Even Hitler liked dogs.
Damn. I was almost hoping this was the good land we've been searching for. Guess not.
Aside from the crap in the streets, the villa's okay. Walls are sturdy, the gate solid. But as a precaution, I've had two of the wall cannons elevated to point down at the beach in front of the gate. Jack had the idea of loading them with pieces of coral and broken clamshells.
Short range only, but it'll blow any boarding party onto the last train west, that's for sure.
Nobody'd try it twice.
Expect trouble?
Only known way to avoid it. Unfortunately, the villa's low on black powder again.
Low?
Damn near out.
Shit!
Now, Doc and I checked around, and there's everything we need to make more. Give me some ceramic or plastic bowls, and I'll have folks filling barrels with gunpowder in less than a day.
Like we use?
Son, our blasters don't use gunpowder. I know we call it gunpowder, but it isn't. Stuff is called cordite, a mix of powdered nitroglycerin and gun cotton. That's why it's smokeless and doesn't cause shells to jam.
Gunpowder is the same thing as black powder, just processed differently, Dean. And got 10 times the power.
Going to need plastic window screens.
Yeah, you would know that.
If what we heard about the Lord Baron is true, he'll go ballistic when he learns we've got the secret.
No choice. When folks hear there's a new Baron, somebody's going to try and attack before you're dug in deep. We'll have to move fast and leave as soon as we can. Then the locals can settle who's in charge among themselves. Not our business.
True enough.
Hopefully there's something useful in the vault.
You mean the armory?
Nope. That was full of powder and shot for the set men. A bunch of crossbows, axes, spare parts from broken weapons, that sort of stuff. But your faithful guards wouldn't let us in without bloodshed. Or you.
Because I'm the Baron. Okay, let's see what Langford was hiding from everybody.
Could be a pile of pre-dark porn. Lord knows I've seen that before.
Or a nuke. Only one way to find out.
Rising from the dining table, the companions headed for the door. Outside, the squad of armed sec men in the courtyard moved quickly out another door, weapons at the ready. In the noisy, gaudy house, the madam was crouched over a basin of warm water, washing herself in preparation for the next sec man who lay naked on the sweaty bed, when she heard a snatch of conversation from departing customers.
You said it's gray?
Yeah, and supposed to be a lot better than our black powder.
Gray powder? Ain't no law against making that, is there?
Nope.
Brushing past the nude man, the madam rushed to the doorway, but there was a crowd of sec men waiting in line, and it was impossible to tell who'd been talking.